my Corinthians chapter 12. We're going to read starting in verse 12. I'm going to go through 27. For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and have all been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole body were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body just as He pleased. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now indeed there are many members, yet one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much rather, those members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary, and those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, on these we bestow greater honor. And our unpresentable parts have greater modesty, but our presentable parts have no need. But God composed the body, having given greater honor to that part which lacks it, that there should be no schism in the body or division in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. For if one member is honored, all of the members rejoice with it. Now you are the body of Christ, and members individually. This is a passage of Scripture I think we're all very familiar with. You know, we've all seen and read this passage before, and we've all had studies about this passage. So the things I'm going to say in the next few minutes aren't necessarily going to be brand new, but I think they're things that we need to refocus on every once in a while. At least I do. Because we are all different. Aren't we? We all have different talents. We all have different gifts that God has given us. And the purpose of the church, if you've been in Papa's class several months ago, he had a whole series about this exact thing, about using your gifts and using your talents and how that goes hand in hand with the fellowship that we have together as Christians and the church that Christ died for. We all have these gifts, and the purpose of having the gifts and everybody having different gifts is for everybody to come together and use the gifts, use the talents that God has specifically given you so that the body will function, so that the body will work together. And if one person is pulled from the body, the whole body suffers because of it, you know? Because it's a missing link. This morning, actually, a little parallel. This morning, we were getting ready, and Samantha was in the bedroom, and I was in the living room, and I was trying to keep Xander, occupied until we were all ready to go. And I shut the door to the bedroom. Didn't think that Xander's little pinky finger was in, the hinge part. Right? I knew as soon as I closed the door that his pinky finger was in the hinge. Okay? He just...
What was your clue?
Okay. I mean, it's very obvious. And so, luckily, it was just the tip of his pinky that was caught in wasn't caught in the whole door, the whole door hinge. It was just... And there was actually, when I examined it, I'd never really looked at the hinge that closely before, but there was actually a little bit of space So it wasn't like it flattened his finger, you know, kind of like just kind of, you know, halfway. But it's still, you can see where that door had pressed down on that. When one member suffers, the whole body suffers, right? When one member is taken out of the picture, you know, it hurts the body. So it's so important that everybody, each person here, each person in our congregation uses your talents. First of all, that we find out what our talents are. I think most of us in here are probably, for the most part, determine what our strengths are, what things we're kind of good at that we could continue to grow in and get better at, and then where our weaknesses are. We first of all find out what our strengths are, find what our talents are, and then purposefully put those into use for the congregation. These are some of the things. This is chapter 10, by the way, the last chapter of the book. He doesn't really go into what we're talking about in as much detail as what I'm saying right now. He kind of mentioned this in the chapter. I thought it was a kind of a key point that I wanted to bring out. Because the fact is that, you know, he's never, our God, he says in the book, he says, we serve a God that is a creator, not just a duplicator. He's a creator. He's never created a Matt Johnson before. He's never created a Chris Post before. Now, okay, so if you look at Facebook and you type in Chris Post in Facebook, you probably come up with 75 Chris Posts. Okay, so there are other Chris Posts, right? Has anybody ever done that? Seen how many Jerry Morgans there are?
Afraid to look?
I don't know. I typed it in one time. There's a lot of Chris Posts, actually, but he's never created a Chris Post with my exact talents and the place that I am right now. You know, everybody's unique. You have your own talents. The key to this is, and like I said, this is not, all of this that I'm saying is not brand new. You've heard this before. But I think the key is that no matter where you are in your life, Papa's the oldest one in here, and he could probably attest to this, I don't know, it's up to him. No matter where you are in your life, you can always take the next step. You can always go further. You can always find new ways to use your talents. You can always try to strengthen talents that might be a little bit weaker for you. So no matter where we are, this is still something that sometimes we need to revisit and focus on. Yeah, go from having no talent in this to developing a whole new talent. Right. Okay. So if you've gotten all your talents down, you've strengthened them to where you think you can't strengthen them anymore, just start over fresh, right? Start on a new one. David had a great lesson, I thought. I'm thankful you put those on the internet. Kind of a revisit of a sermon that you preached about Peter. And he looked at Peter. The ups and downs in Peter's life. The ups and downs in Peter's time with Christ. Because there were ups and downs, weren't there? You know? He left what he knew. He left everything, essentially, and followed Christ. He had faith enough to do that. But then later on, Jesus tells him, why do you have such little faith? Remember at sea when he was at, when he started walking on the water and then he lost faith and started looking around at the waves and all that and then sank, he said, why do you have such little faith? You know, how do you think Peter felt when Christ said that to him? You know, and if you just continue to look at Peter and the things that they talked about last week, Jesus called him Satan. Away from me, Satan. Right? How do you think Peter felt after Jesus said that to him? How do you think Peter felt after the rooster crowed? Felt pretty bad. In Peter's life, there were definite lows. In your life, there's going to be lows. There's going to be ups. There's going to be downs. There's going to be times when things are going great things are not going so well, we just need to purposefully, we need to expect those times. You know, not be surprised when that happens necessarily, but just go ahead and expect it. You know, sometimes you're going to fail. Just plan on it. You're going to fail sometimes. In my business, what I do, you know, I might have 6 sales calls in a day. And so I go to one, and maybe at that sales call, the customer doesn't receive me the way that I would like to be received. You know, sometimes if the sales presentation isn't just right, or you don't feel like the conversation flowed the way it could have or the way it has before, you know, and you just don't feel as good about this appointment. You know, I've gotten to where I'm really pretty good at just, like, get in the van, blow that off, go to the next one, because the next one could be completely different, right? You've got to just wipe the feet off your shoes and just go, you know. So I say that, but I also want to confess a little something. You know, I've gotten good with that, but there's another thing, you know, as far as failing and expecting to fail, that kind of thing. I've gotten good with wiping the dust off my feet, with that type of thing. But then, also, the other side, in my life, I don't want to say this. I look at my character flaws, you know, the things that aren't my strengths, and sometimes I dwell on that, and I beat myself up for these things, you know. These are the things that, yeah, I mean, I just linger, I just think about that. Instead of focusing on the things that I'm good at, focusing on my strengths, which is where I need to focus. You know, I go on a sales call and it doesn't work out real well. I wipe my dust off my feet and I go. I need to apply that to this other area. That's kind of where my hang-up is. I struggle with that. You know, I linger on the things I'm not good at when I should just dust that off, think about the things I'm good at, my strengths, and go with that instead of just beating myself up. I don't know if any of you can relate to that, but I need to apply that to the other part of my life. Anyway, but failure. Sometimes you're going to fail. We just need to expect that.
Kind of like Chris, that's so funny that you said that, because that's something just within the last few days. I mean, I'm really bad about that, you know, as well. I was in court Friday and won the case. Everything went really well, which is odd for court. Usually I come out, I prepare for absolute worst every time you go in. And somebody just, 2 people looked funny towards me. And I knew exactly what they were thinking. They weren't doing their job. And they looked at me because they got angry because I brought up something that was going to make their job get a lot worse, you see. And they weren't doing what they were supposed to do. And I'm like, yeah, but, well, we're actually not finished. And, of course, they were all like, whoop, we're done. Out of here. And I'm like, well, there is a little bit more to this. And they knew I was right. I mean, it had to do with the child abuse thing. And we weren't finished. And we had won the case. And the child was safe. And the bad guy was gone. And, you know, everything was supposedly, but the look that they gave me, couldn't shake. There was nothing. I went and got in the car. It just tore me up. I'm like, why? I could not focus on how well everything else went, that I did a really good job, you know, 6 months preparing to get this where it was. Wow. You know, I could not even think for 2 people, you know, cutting their eyes and looking over and what could I have done different? What could I have said? What could I, you know, and I do that. When you said that, that's just something, you know, the last couple of days have just eaten me up. And I keep going back and saying, if the child's safe, you know, the end result is good. The end result is good. You know this is right. You're hung up on what 2 people, an attorney and somebody else, looked at me funny, and I keep going back and forth and back and forth. It just, you know, the injustice of it all and how, what could I have done? You know, could I have fixed it? Should I have said something different? Should I have let it go? Should I, you know, just all this. I couldn't even see the good, you know, for that. So.
sometimes it's hard to get over that.
It is.
Get over those things.
It is. I mean, I came home and I was just sour, and there wasn't a whole court. The whole family knows they were in the whole court. So I come home. Usually it goes ugly, and the court didn't go well. I'm like, yeah, we won. What's wrong with you? Yeah. You know, like, I don't want to talk about it. But it's just, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a hard thing, you know, when you can't focus on strengths and good things and, you know, for the lack of something else. And I look at them like a stumbling block. I mean, literally, it was a stumbling block. Mm-hmm. So.
It's always hard. I mean, what they say is it takes 12 positives to overcome one negative. Mm-hmm. You literally, you know, have to do something good 12 times to remember it. Mm-hmm. But you always remember the one bad. I don't know why it is, but it seems to be that's the way we're, you know, Satan's got us trained that, oh, it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always look at the negative. But that's not what we should be doing.
When you say that, one guy that comes to mind is Thomas Edison. Do you get to visit his place? You visited his workshop?
We went to his final factory that was Orange Park.
Cool. So, do you know how many times it took him? I don't know exactly. But with the light bulb, when Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, he failed what?
350,000 times.
What? Really?
350,000 separate,
wow,
different materials before he hit on the one that worked the best.
I didn't even think of that. That's crazy. So, you know, he failed that many times, but what did he say? His quote was what?
Oh, like, invention is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration.
But all the failures he just learned were ways that it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, so he just kept on trying because he knew it was going to work sometimes.
It's not a failure, it's an elimination of one of the possibilities.
Of one of the possibilities, right. Yeah. So, you gotta get over it. You gotta get over that. Pick yourself up when you fail. Move on to the next thing. You know, focus on your strengths, not on what's getting you down. I also heard it said like this: the best way to not make bad choices is to use your experience. How do you get experience? Bad choices. Okay? It's one of those things. So like we said, you know, going back to Peter. And like Dave said last week, Peter was up and down. Our lives are like that sometimes too. But what was it about Peter? He had what? What did he have? He had a heart to keep on following Christ. He had the desire to follow God. And to listen to and to follow Him. And that's what we need to have. We need to have that kind of heart. We need to have that desire. And I think that it involves finding what your talents are, using those in the church. It also involves listening to God as He is leading your life. How many in this classroom believe, actual show of hands, believe that sometimes God can put an idea or a thought or a work or something in your mind? God can put those works in your mind for you to go out, you know. And it's definitely based, you know, it bases on your talents, you know, what you're good at, and He might put a thought in your mind. How many think that God does that? Yeah, okay. I believe He does. How many of you think that it's possible to push those away. Push those ideas, those thoughts, you know. Wow, God, you know. And you might not even realize it right at first that this is something, you know, maybe this is, you might not even realize this is something that God's putting into your heart, you know. This is kind of a thought that you have, and then over time it might grow, but you just continue to think about this idea or this thought, and then realize, maybe God is putting this into my heart. Maybe this is something He really wants me to do. But for a while, you might be kind of pushing it off. Like, there might be an obstacle or something you have to you have to change your life. You have to restructure your life. I mean, some of these things can cause you to, I mean, if you were to actually follow this idea or follow this, whatever you have, you would have to change some things in your life. You know, would you have to change your job? Would you have to sell your house and move? You know, would things like this. I mean, and so you're scared about making those kinds of changes in your life, so you just push these thoughts off. I think I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself a little bit. But maybe, you know, maybe God's telling you, you need to make a change in your life. You need to make whatever it is, you know. I'm putting this idea, this thought into your mind. Follow, you know, do it. Follow me.
I've seen it happen.
Is that an example? Or
oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The whole reason we're in Kansas City is while we were growing up, my brother and I were older too. We lived in Midwestern Illinois, which was predominantly Catholic in the county of Connecticut. And Mom and Dad said, this is not the best place to raise the kids. They're not going to find mates here that will help them grow. And we really need to move. And they talked about it for a couple of years, and finally God said, all right, this is the time. And by doing so, he made the company Dad worked for so unbearable that he said, I have got to leave this place. And that's why we're here. He quit a job, sold the house, and moved here. Because he said, there are enough churches there. Jim can go to Lipscomb, which he went for one quarter and dropped out. But they can find a mate that will help them be the people they should be. We don't need to stay here. We need to move. He didn't have a job. He didn't have a prospect of a house. He settled here because he had a cousin that lived here. So, you know, that was the only contact they had.
Wow.
You know, move four kids, take them out of school. Jim was about to be a senior in high school. We're moving. Just because they said this is not the right place to be.
But it was the place where he grew up.
Oh, well, not really. It was, they had already,
oh,
they were ready,
from Louisiana.
They were already 90 miles from Chicago.
I got you.
Yeah, we were in the middle of no place. It was 16,000 people, the biggest town in 60 miles.
Right. So he wasn't leaving everything he knew.
Basically.
Well, yeah.
You know, he came here and the people wouldn't talk to Mom and Dad. He bought a store, he ran a hardware store. Literally, if I worked Saturday, they would come talk to me because I picked up the draw faster. They would say, I don't understand your dad.
Yeah. I relate to that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know what he's talking about.
So
it
takes courage.
Yeah, it took a lot of courage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took him
2 years to find a job back in the field he left. But it took God making the environment he was in. I mean, literally, the factory sold 5 times and 3 plant managers had heart attacks. It was that stressful. And he said, okay, I think I'm getting the hint. Time to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can look up to that. I mean, that takes a lot of courage to do that. A lot of commitment, a lot of faith.
Oh, it wasn't for the house. I mean, we left a house up there that would be a mansion anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
In that little town, you know, downsized to one where everybody was sharing rooms.
Is that a Moss Trail?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, sure.
But, you know, so yes, it happens all the time. It's, are we willing to accept it, and are we willing to act on it?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we rationalize all kinds of reasons why we don't need to do it?
That's easier to do.
Much easier.
Much more comfortable.
It's amazing how much work we put into something to avoid doing it.
Yeah, true.
Chris, I think we're 18. I mentioned this before, but sometimes we think that we are supposed to make our own destiny. Are we supposed to come into a body like this and create our own space based on what we need or what, you know, what's in our comfort zone or whatever. And 18 says that God arranged the members of the body, each one of them as he chose. And I guess it goes to what you say, that somehow God will use the people that he has put together in a place if they will just realize that it's God that put us here. God arranged us. God placed us in this place. And if there's a, if it's a need or something that we can somehow step into, even though it may be new to us, it may be something not necessarily that we pinpointed as our strength. You know, sometimes God uses our weakness. I think he even says that, doesn't he? He uses our weakness to demonstrate how great he is. He used the apostles who, you know, they were looked upon as weak in the area of teaching anybody. They were just fishermen, and yet he used the weakness, their weaknesses, to elevate himself, made him look. And that, I think David, or you one, talked about how we are to look to how can we glorify God with what we do, and not so much to what we think or how we perceive, to look at the needs of the group, of the body. Why did God put me here? What did he put me here to do? Is this something that needs to be done? Can I do it? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I need to look more at that concept. God chose to put us here in this arrangement, and we are to fit into it. Not because of us, but because of who put us here. Sorry.
No, that's great. No, I meant to actually a little bit ago bring up verse 18, so I'm glad you went back to that. But you said it a whole lot better than I ever could have, so thanks for...
It also says he chose to make some more honorable than others. You know, some he put there to be noticed. Some he put there not to be noticed. And yet still has a purpose. You know, not everybody's going to have the same purpose. Not everybody's going to be noticed for what they do. Whether you want to be or not. You know. But it doesn't mean you get to not do it.
Well, and he also says that unlike what we always think, the ones that have the least, seemingly the least amount of honor or the least amount of obviousness, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, but those are the ones that seem the most honorable, the ones that are in the background, the ones that are just going about the business of doing the things that God has given them to do, even though they don't seem to be, you know, up front, don't seem to be out. He says those are many times more honorable than the others. Church with a strong preacher and a strong song leader and a couple of strong elders, you know, is that church going to be stronger than a church that has a lot of stronger members who are just kind of quiet in the background? I mean,
that's the only 5-6 people.
You can only lead, you know, a strong group of leaders, you know, can't lead people who are not willing to, you know, follow and do their work. So I think too often in the church we do focus on those main, you know, well, I'm going to a place because of a strong preacher or because of a, you know, a couple of strong elders or whatever. You know, you have to also realize that it takes a lot of people in the background to make a church work.
You want to shock a preacher at the back of a building someday? Tell him you come here in spite of him. I'm in this congregation in spite of you. I don't come here to hear you speak. The fact that you are here is not the reason I come here. I don't come to worship you or what you have to say. I'm here in spite of you because this is where I need to be to work. You know, we elevate so many positions that shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. You know, I respect the song leader because I'm not willing to get up and do it. I know it's difficult for me. It would be difficult for you all if I did it. and therefore, I respect that position. But, you know, we shouldn't put something up there unless you're willing to, you know my answer, you can't complain about anything unless you're willing to do it. Mm-hmm. You don't like the way I did it? You show me how. Don't complain. Show me how it should be done. And if you can't do that, then you have no right to complain.
I've heard you say that a few times.
And if you say that to the person complaining, it's amazing how fast they stop complaining to you. Mm-hmm. I didn't say they stop complaining. They just stop complaining to you. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's their problem because they're told they're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Give me the opportunity. Show me how it should be done. If you're not willing to do that, you're not willing to put the effort into complaining even.
Keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know how many problems would go away in the church everywhere if that was everybody's idea? I will not complain about anything I'm not willing to do myself.
We should put that on the bulletin board somewhere.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's truly what it says. I mean, Paul said do everything without complaining or grumbling.
Well, just like Dave was talking about a couple weeks ago about taking yourself out of your comfort zone, I think that could tie in with what Chris was talking about with our strengths and weaknesses, whereas some of us maybe aren't speakers or teachers or song leaders, but if we put our faith in Christ, then he will provide everything that we need to do the job that's set in front of us. And with that said, there's no reason to have to complain about anything.
No. The majority of the conversions you read about were not from big preachers. They were individuals that went out and spoke to another person. And I don't know any of us that can't do that.
Right.
Well, the strongest song leader is only as good as if people will actually sing.
Yeah, otherwise it's a solo.
You can get up there and wave your arm and sing, but if nobody's there to sing with you,
then it's a solo.
All of us have been places like that where, you know, if the people don't sing, then so the people in these who seemingly don't feel important, you know, they're the ones that are the most important, you know, as far as making everything happen. And that goes, I think, with everything else too. The preacher can preach as many great sermons as he wants to, but if nobody puts it into action, then what's the point of the sermon? You know, so it's as much the people that are sitting listening as it is the people that are in the front, you know, seemingly the most important, and it's just not the truth.
No, actually, it's more so. The strength of a congregation is not those that are standing up front. It's the ones sitting in pews 2 through 20 or wherever, however many you have.
Chairs.
Chairs. You wrote them and lined them up however you like. Yeah. Seats. Because the person on the back seat is just as important as the one on the front. He just got there first, right? Because that's how buildings fill up.
The back and the front.
The back portion. Yeah.
We are running out of time. I do want to kind of finish up with this question, though. And I think this is, for me, this is one of the biggest questions for me in this book. Throughout this whole study, Francis Chan, this book has been encouraging us, almost trying to guide us to love more, to give ourselves fully to God, to just surrender to his will and what he would have you to do. This has kind of been, you know, an up and down type study for me, and I think it's definitely been a good thing. And like Dave said last week, and use the example of Peter again, it's a process. You know, he said, Peter, last week, what was it, Acts chapter what, where he was preaching with boldness, 4 or so. You know, he's preaching with boldness, but he didn't start that way. You know, it was a process. He had to go through the ups and downs. He had to continue to take steps to get to that point. Nobody got there. And he even had, Dave said, he even had Jesus as his mentor. He had the man right there and still, you know, had his failures, still had his low points. So we should expect that too, but it's a process. And I think in the process, we all need to take the next step. I think that's the thing. Where are you going to go from here?
you know, let's say that now you're ready to take the next step. You're ready to listen to God, and you're ready to follow the will that God has for you. You're ready to give more of your heart to God, and you want to express that desire, and you want to express that faith through works or through your actions. You know, what is the next step? James says what? Faith without works is dead. So you want to express the love and the faith that you have in works. So what's the next step for you? You know, we talked a few minutes ago about how God may plant a desire, or God may plant a thought in your heart. If you have something like that, I mean, I think that might be the next step for you. I've had one of those recently as yesterday. I just realized, you know what, maybe God put this in my heart. And that's really what I need to do. So, take the next step toward that. Or sometimes, you know, God doesn't necessarily have to always tell you something. Matt, go do this. You know, do we always have that? You know, I went on vacation last week. Did God tell me to go on vacation? No, you know, but I went anyway. Sometimes you can, you can just do something. You can just start somewhere. Just do something to get it going. To take that next step. Whether it be if this is your comfort zone, you know, just step out of that and do something that you're not, you know, that you wouldn't normally do. Whatever it is, you know, but sometimes, so what I'm saying is it can come from maybe two areas. It can either come from something God's planted in your heart, an idea that you've been thinking that, you know, this is where I need to go. Or it could be just, I don't really know, I'm just going to do something and start somewhere. So, I don't know, think about that.
You know, I think that's perfect, because when Peter denied Christ three times, what did Christ do with before he ascended? Took Peter and said, "Do you love me?"
Three times.
And each time, what did he tell him?
"I love you."
"I do." And then Christ said, "What? Feed my lambs." And the second time he said, "Tend my sheep. Feed my sheep. You want to show me? Yeah. Here's how you work over your failure. Yeah, you feel it. You know it. And how do you get over it? You work through it. Mm-hmm. You know, go do it. Put that love into action and make it manifest in your life."
That's the next step. So, thank you all for being here.